glumming. She even took her turns at the cook fire, to my stomach's despair. I wondered what the menhirs made of our relationship. No matter the pretense, there was a brittleness, a formality that was hard to overcome, and the best we could fake was a partnership, which I am certain they found strange. When did man and woman travel together thus, without sharing bedroll and such? The question of pursuing verisimilitude that far never arose, and just as well. My panic, my terror at the suggestion would have been such that nothing else would have arisen. 10 miles from the hole, we breasted a hill and encountered a menhir. It stood beside the way, 20 feet of weird stone, doing nothing. The lady asked, in touristy fashion, "Is that one of the talking stones?" "Yep. Hi, Rock. I'm home." Old Rock didn't have anything to say. We passed on. When I looked back, it was gone. Little had changed. As we crested the last ridge, though, we saw a forest of walking trees crowding the creek. A stand of menhirs, both living and dead, guarded the crossing. The backwards camel centaurs gambled among them. Old Father Tree stood by himself, tinkling, though there was not a breath of wind. Up high, a single buzzard-like avian soared against shattered clouds, watching. One or another of its kind had followed us for days. Of a human presence, there was no sign. What did Darling do with her army? She could not pack those men into the hole. For a moment I was frightened that I had returned to an untenanted keep. Then, as we splashed across the creek, Elmo and Silent stepped out of the coral. I dove off my animal and gathered them into a monster hug. They returned it, and in best Black Company tradition, did not ask a single question. "God damn," I said. "God damn, it's good to see you. I heard you guys was wiped out west somewhere." Elmo looked at the lady with just the slightest hint of curiosity. "Oh, Elmo, Silent, this is Ardath." She smiled. "So pleased to meet you. Croker has said so much about you." I had not said a word, but she had read the annals. She dismounted and offered her hand. Each took it, baffled, for only Darling, in their experience, expected treatment as an equal. "Well, let's go down," I said. "Let's go down. I've got 1,000 things to report." "Yeah?" Elmo said. And that said a lot, for he looked up our back trail as he said it. Some people who had gone away with me had not come back. "I don't know. We had half the Taken after us. We got separated. I couldn't find them again. But I never heard anything about them being captured. Let's go down. See Darling. I've got incredible news. And get me something to eat. We've been eating each other's cooking forever, and she's a worse cook than I am." "Gook," Elmo said, and slapped me across the back. "And you lived?" "I'm one tough old buzzard, Elmo. You ought to know." "Shit, man, I realized I was chattering like a wacko. I grinned. Silent signed, "Welcome home, Croker. Welcome home." "Come," I told the lady as we reached the entrance to the hole and took her hand. "It'll seem like the pit till your eyes get used to it, and brace yourself for the smell. Gods, the stench. Gag a maggot." All kinds of excitement down below. It faded into studied indifference as we passed, then resumed behind us. Silent led straight to the conference room. Elmo split off to order us up something to eat. As we entered, I realized that I still held the lady's hand. She gave me half a smile, in which there was a hell of a lot of nervousness. Talk about strutting into the dragon's lair. Bold old Croker gave her hand a squeeze. Darling looked ragged. So did the lieutenant. 12 others were there, few of whom I knew. They must have come aboard after the Imperials evacuated the perimeter of the plain. Darling hugged me for a long time. So long, I became flustered. We are not touchy people, she and I. She finally backed off and gave the lady a look in which there was a hint of jealousy. I signed, "This is Ardath. She will help me translate. She knows the old languages well. Darling nodded. She asked no questions. So much was I trusted. The food arrived. Elmo dragged in a table and chairs and shooed out everyone but myself, the lieutenant, himself, Silent, and the lady. He might have sent her away too, but remained unsure of her standing with me. We ate, and as we did, I related my tale in snatches when my hands and mouth were not full. There were some rough moments, especially when I told Darling that Raven was alive. In retrospect, I think it was harder on me than on her. I was afraid she would get all excited and hysterical. She did nothing of the sort. First, she flat refused to believe me. And I could understand that, for till he disappeared, Raven had been the cornerstone of her universe emotionally. She could not see him not including her in his biggest lie ever, just so he could slip away to go poke around the Barrowland. That made no sense to her. Raven never lied to her before. Made no sense to me, either. But then, as I have noted before, I suspected there was more in the shadows than anyone was admitting. I sniffed the faintest whiff that maybe Raven was running from instead of to. Darling's denials did not last long. She is not one to disdain truth indefinitely only because it is unpleasant. She handled the pain far better than I anticipated, and that suggested maybe she had had a chance to bleed off some of the worst in the past. Still, Raven's present circumstances did nothing for Darling's emotional health, already doing poorly after her defeat at Horse. That harbinger of grander defeats to come. Already she suspected she might have to face the Imperials without benefit of the information I had been sent to acquire. I conjured universal despair when I announced my failure, and added, "I have it on high authority that what we sought isn't in those papers anyway, though I can't be sure till Ardath and I finish what we have here." I did sketch what I learned from Raven's documents before losing them. I did not lie outright. That would not be forgiven later when the truth came out, as inevitably it must. I just overlooked a few details. I even admitted having been captured, questioned, and imprisoned. "What the hell are you doing here, then?" Elmo demanded. "How come you're even alive?" "They turned us loose, Ardath and me, after that business you had near Horse. That was a message. I'm supposed to deliver another."
"Such as?"
"Unless you're blind and stupid, you'll have noticed that you're not under attack. The lady has ordered all operations against the rebellion ceased."
"Why?"
"You haven't been paying attention. Because the Dominator is stirring."
"Come on, Croaker. We finished that business in Juniper."
"I went to the Barrowland. I saw for myself, Lieutenant. That thing is going to break loose. One of its creatures is out already, maybe dogging One Eye and them. I'm convinced. The Dominator is a step from breaking out, and not half-assed like in Juniper." I turned to the lady.
"Ardath, what was that I figured? I lost track of how long we've been in the plane. It was about 90 days when we came in."
"It took you 8 days to get here," Elmo said. I lifted an eyebrow.
"The Menhirs."
"Of course. 8 days, then. Away from 90 for a worst-case scenario. 82 days till the Great Barrow opens." I went into more detail about the great tragic river floods. The lieutenant was not convinced. Neither was Elmo. And you cannot blame them. The lady weaves crafty, intricate plots, and they were sneaky guys who judged others by themselves. I did not proselytize. I was not wholeheartedly born again myself. It was of little consequence whether or not those two believed, anyway. Darling makes the decisions. She signed for everyone to leave but me. I asked Elmo to show Ardath around and find her a place to bunk. He looked at me oddly. Like everyone else, he figured I'd brought me home a girlfriend. I had trouble keeping a straight face. All those years they have ridden me because of a few romances written when we first entered the lady's service. And now I'd brought her home. I figured Darling wanted to talk about Raven. I was not wrong, but she surprised me by signing, "She has sent you to propose an alliance, has she not?" Quick little devil. Not exactly, though in practice it would amount to that. I went into the details, known and reasoned, of the situation. Signing is not quick work, but Darling remained attentive and patient, not at all distracted by whatever was going on inside her. She took me over the value, or lack thereof, of my document cache. Not once did she ask about Raven, nor about Ardath, though my friend was on her mind too. She signed, "She is correct in saying that our feud becomes inconsequential if the Dominator rises. My question must be, is the threat genuine or a ploy? We know just how convoluted a scheme she can manage." "I am sure," I signed in reply, because Raven was sure. He had made up his mind before the ladies' people began to suspect. In fact, as far as I can tell, he developed the evidence that convinced them.
"Goblin and One-Eye, are they safe?"
"As far as I know. I never heard of them being captured."
"They should be getting close. Those documents, they are the crux still."
"Even if they do not contain the secret of her name, but only that of her husband."
"She wants access?"
"I would assume so. I was released for some reason, though I cannot say what the reason behind the reason was." Darling nodded.
"So I thought.
Yet I am convinced that she is honest in this, that we must consider the Dominator the more dangerous and immediate peril. It should not be too difficult to anticipate most of the ways she could become treacherous."
"And there is Raven."
"Here it comes," I thought. "Yes."
"I will reflect, Croker."
"There is not much time."
"There is all the time in the world, in a way."
"I will reflect. You and your lady friend translate." I felt I had been dismissed before we got to why she wanted to see me privately. The woman has a face like stone. You can't tell much about what is going on inside. I moved toward the door slowly.
"Croker," she signed. "Wait."
I stopped. This was it.
"What is she, Croker?"
Damn. Ducked around it again. Chills on my part. Guilt. I did not want to lie outright.
"Just a woman."
"Not a special woman. A special friend."
"I guess she is special, in her way."
"I see. Ask Silent to come in." Again, I went slowly, nodding. But it was not till I actually started to open the door that she beckoned me back. In accordance with instructions, I sat. She did not. She paced. She signed, "You think I am cold toward great news. You think ill of me because I am not excited that Raven is alive."
"No, I thought it would shock you, that it would cause you great distress."
"Shock? No. I am not entirely surprised. Distressed? Yes. It opens old wounds and makes them more painful." Puzzled, I watched as she continued to prowl.
"Our Raven. He never grew up. Fearless as a stone, utterly without the handicap of a conscience. Tough. Smart. Hard. Fierce. All those things. Yes?
Yes.
And a coward."
"What? How can you—"
"He runs away. There were machinations around the Limper which pulled his wife in, years ago. Did he try to discover the truth and work it out? He killed people and ran away with the Black Company to kill more people. He abandoned 2 babies without a word of goodbye."
She was hot now. She was opening the doors on secrets and spilling stuff of which I had seen only the vaguest glimmering reflections.
"Do not defend him. I have had the power to investigate, and I did," she signed. "He fled the Black Company. For my sake. as much excuse to avoid entanglement as reason. Why did he salvage me in that village? Because of guilt over children he had abandoned. I was a safe child, and while a child I remained a safe emotional investment. But I did not remain a child, Croker, and I knew no other man in all those years in hiding. I should have known better. I saw how he pushed people away if they tried to get close in any way that was not completely one-sided and under his control. But after the horrible things he did in Juniper, I thought I could be the one to redeem him. On the road south, when we were running from the dark danger of the lady and the light danger of the company, I betrayed my true feelings. I opened the lid on a chest of dreams, nurtured from a time before I was old enough to think about men. He became a changed man, a frightened animal caught in a cage. He was relieved when news came that the lieutenant had appeared with some of the company. It was not but a matter of hours before he was dead. I suspected then. I think a part of me always knew. And that is why I am not so devastated now as you want. Yes, I know you know I cry myself to sleep sometimes. I cry for a little girl's dreams. I cry because the dreams will not die, though I am powerless to make them come true. I cry because the one thing I truly want I cannot have. Do you understand? I thought about Lady and Lady's situation and nodded. I signed nothing back. I am going to cry again. Go out, please. Tell Silent to come. I did not have to look for him. He was waiting in the conference room. I watched him go inside, wondering if I was seeing things or seeing things. She'd certainly given me something to think about.
Chapter 43 Picnic. Put on any deadline and time accelerates. The clockwork of the universe runs on an overwound mainspring. 4 days went down the jakes, zip, and I did not waste much time sleeping. Ardath and I translated, and translated, and translated. She read, translating aloud. I wrote till my hands cramped. Occasionally, Silent took over for me. I spot-checked by slipping in documents already done, especially those both Tracker and I had worked. Not once did I catch a misinterpretation. That fourth morning, I did catch something. We were doing one of those lists. This soiree must have been so big that if held today, we'd call it a war, or at least a riot. On and on. So-and-so of such-and-such, with ladies whosis, 16 titles, 4 of which made sense. By the time the heralds finished proclaiming everyone, the party must have died of encroaching senility. Anyway, along about the middle of the list, I heard a little catch in her breath. Aha, I said to myself. A bolt strikes close. My ears pricked up. She went on smoothly. Moments later, I was not sure I had not imagined it. Reason told me the name that startled her would not be the one she was speaking. She was toddling along at my writing pace. Her eyes would be well ahead of my hand. Not one of the names that followed clanged any bell. I would go over the list later, just in case, hoping she had deleted something. No such luck. Come afternoon, she said, "Break, Croker. I'm going for tea. You want some?" Sure. Maybe a hunk of bread, too. I scribbled another 30 minutes before realizing what had happened. What? The lady herself offering to fetch. Me putting in an order without thinking. I got a case of the nerves. How much was she role-playing? How much pretending for fun? It must be centuries since she got her own tea, if ever. I rose, started to follow, halted outside my cell door. 15 steps down the tunnel, in the grungy, feeble lamplight, Otto had her cornered against the wall. He was talking some shit. Why I had not foreseen the problem, I do not know. I doubted that she had. Surely it was not one she faced normally. Otto got pushy.
I started to go break it up, then vacillated. She might be angered by my interference. A light step from the other direction. Elmo. He paused. Otto was too single-minded to notice us.
"Better do something," Elmo said. "We don't need that kind of trouble."
She did not appear frightened or upset.
"I think maybe she can handle it."
Otto got a no that could not be misinterpreted, but he did not accept it. He tried to lay hands on. He got a ladylike slap for his trouble, which angered him. He decided to take what he wanted. As Elmo and I moved forward, he disappeared in a flurry of kicks and punches that set him down in the muck on the floor, holding his belly with one arm and that arm with the other. Ardath went on as though nothing had happened.
I said, "I told you she could handle it."
"Remind me not to overstep myself," Elmo said. Then he grinned and tapped my arm.
"Bet she's mean on the horizontal, eh?"
Damned if I did not blush. I gave him a foolish grin. It only confirmed his suspicions. What the hell? Anything would have. That is the way those things go. We lugged Otto to my room. I thought he would puke up his guts. But he controlled himself. I checked for broken bones. He was just bruised.
"All yours, Elmo," I said, for I knew the old sergeant was rehearsing a few choice words.
He took Otto by the elbow and said, "Step down to my office, soldier." He started dirt tumbling from the tunnel overhead when he explained the facts of life. When Ardath returned, she behaved as if nothing had happened. Perhaps she missed us watching. But after half an hour, she asked,
"Can we take a break? Go outside.
Walk." "You want me to come?" She nodded.
"We need to talk. Privately."
"All right." To tell the truth, whenever I lifted my nose from my work, I got a little claustrophobic myself. My venture westward reminded me how good it is to stretch one's legs.
"Hungry?" I asked. "Too serious to make a picnic?"
She looked startled, then charmed by the idea.
"Good. Let's do that."
So we went to the cook and baker and filled a bucket and went topside. Though she did not notice everyone smirking, I did. There is but one door in the hole, to the conference room, behind which Darling's personal quarters lie. Neither my quarters nor Ardath's had so much as a curtain closure. Folks figured we were off for the privacy of the wide-open spaces. Dream on. Up there, there would be more spectators than down below. They just would not be human. The sun was maybe 3 hours short of setting when we stepped outside, and it smacked us right in the eyes. Rough. But I expected it. Should have warned her. We strolled up the creek, breathing slightly sagey air and saying nothing. The desert was silent. Not even Father Tree stirred. The breeze was insufficient to sigh in the coral. After a while, I said, "Well?"
"I needed to get out. The walls were closing in. The null made it worse. I feel helpless down there. It preys on the mind."
"Oh." We rounded a coral head and encountered a menhir, one of my old buddies, I guess, for he reported,
"There are strangers on the plain, Croker."
No lie. Then, "Which strangers, Rock?" But it had nothing more to say.
"They're always like that."
"Or worse." "Well, the null begins to fade. Feel better?"
"I felt better the moment I stepped outside. That's the gate to hell. How can you people live like that?"
"It isn't much, but it's home. We came to bare earth." She halted.
"What's this?"
"Old Father Tree. You know what they think we're up to down there."
"I know. Let them think it. Call it protective coloration." "That is your Father Tree."
She indicated himself.
"That's him."
I walked on.
"How you doing today, old timer?"
Must be 50 times I have asked that.
I mean, the old guy is remarkable, but just a tree, right?
I did not expect a response. But Father Tree's leaves started tinkling the moment I spoke.
"Come back here, Croker."
The lady's voice was commanding, hard, a little shaken. I turned and marched.
"Back to your old self." From the corner of my eye, I caught a shadow in motion, off toward the hole. I concentrated on a bit of coral and nearby brush. "Keep your voice down. We have an eavesdropper."
"That's no surprise."
She spread the ragged blanket she had brought, sat down with her toes right at the edge of the barren. She removed the rag covering the bucket. I settled beside her, positioned so I could watch that shadow.
"Do you know what that is?"
she asked, nodding at the tree. "Nobody does. It's just old Father Tree. The desert clans call him a god. We've seen no evidence of that. One Eye and Goblin were impressed with the fact that he stands almost exactly on the geographical center of the plain, though."
"Yes, I suppose. So much was lost in the fall, I should have suspected. My husband was not the first of his kind, Croker,
nor the White Rose the first of hers. It is a grand cycle, I believe." "You've lost me."
"A very long time ago, even as I measure time, there was another war like that between the Dominator and the White Rose. The light overcame the shadow, but as always, the shadow left its taint on the victors. In order to end the struggle, they summoned a thing from another world, plane, dimension, what have you, the way Goblin might conjure a demon, only this thing was an adolescent god, of sorts, in a sapling avatar. These events were legendary only in my youth, when much more of the past survived, so details are open to question. But it was a summoning of such scope and such price that thousands perished and countries were devastated. But they planted their captive god over the grave of their great enemy, where it would keep him enchained. This tree god would live a million years."
"You mean old Father is sitting on something like the Great Barrow?"
"I did not connect the legends and the plain till I saw that tree. Yes, this earth constrains something as virulent as my husband. So much suddenly makes sense. It all fits. The beasts, the impossible talking rocks, coral reefs 1,000 miles from the sea. It all leaked through from that other world. The change storms are the tree's dreams."
She rattled on, not so much explaining as putting things together for herself. I gaped and remembered the change storm that caught me on the way west. Was I accursed to be caught in a god's nightmare? "This is crazy," I said, and at the same instant decrypted the shape I had been trying to pry from the shadows, bushes, and coral. Silent, squatting on his hams, motionless as a snake awaiting prey. Silent, who had been everywhere I went the last 3 days, like an extra shadow, seldom noticed because he was silent. Well, so much for my confidence that my return with a companion had tickled no suspicions.
"This is a bad place to be, Croker. Very bad. Tell that deaf peasant wench to move."
If I did that, I would have to explain why and reveal who gave me the advice. I doubt she would be impressed.
"I suppose you're right. Well, it won't matter much longer. Let's eat."
She opened a packet and set out what looked like fried rabbit. But there are no rabbits on the plain. For all they got kicked around, their adventure toward horse improved the larder. I dug in. Silent remained motionless in the corner of my eye. "You bastard," I thought. "I hope you're drooling." 3 pieces of rabbit later, I slowed enough to ask, "That about the old-timer is interesting, but does it have any relevance?" Father Tree was raising a ruckus. I wondered why. "Are you afraid of him?" She did not answer. I chucked bones down the creek bank, rose. "Back in a minute." I stomped over to Father Tree. "Old-timer, you got any seeds? Any sprouts? A little something we could take to the Barrowland to plant on top of our own villain?" Talking to that tree all those times heading past was a game. I was possessed of an almost religious awe of its age, but of no conscious belief in it as anything like either the nomads or the lady claimed. Just a gnarly old tree with weird leaves and a bad temper. Temper?
when I touched it, to lean against it while looking up among its bizarre leaves for nuts or seeds, it bit me. Well, not with teeth, but sparks flew. The tips of my fingers stung. When I took them out of my mouth, they looked burned. "Damn," I muttered, and backed off a few steps. "Nothing personal, tree. Thought you might want to help out." Vaguely, I was aware that a menhir now stood near Silent's lurking place. More appeared around the barren area. Something hit me with the force of wind-whale ballast dumped from 100 feet up. I went down. Waves of power, of thought, beat upon me. I whimpered, tried to crawl toward the lady. She extended a hand, but would not cross that boundary. Some of that power began to hint at comprehensibility, but it was like being inside 50 minds at once, with them scattered across the world. No, the plane, and more than 50 minds. As it became more melded, more meshed, I was touching the Menhir minds. That all faded. The sledge of power ceased hammering the anvil that was me. I scrambled for the edge of the barren, though I knew that line demarked no true safety. I reached the blanket, caught my breath, finally turned to face the tree. Its leaves tinkled in exasperation. What happened? Basically, he told me he's doing what he can, not for our sake, but for that of his creatures. That I should go to hell, leave him alone, quit aggravating him, or find my ass in deep shit. Oh, my. I had looked back to see how Silent had taken my encounter.
I warned.
She glanced back, too.
I think maybe we got trouble. Maybe they recognized you.
Almost everyone from the hole had appeared. They were lining up across the trail. The Menhirs were more numerous. Walking trees were forming a circle with us at its center. And we were unarmed, for Darling was there. We were inside the null again. She had on her white linen. She stepped past Elmo and the lieutenant and came toward me. Silent joined her. Behind her came One-Eye, Goblin, Tracker, and Toad-Killer Dog. Those four still had the dust of the trail upon them. They had been on the plane for days, and I had been given no word. You talk about your trap door on your gallows dropping unexpectedly. For 15 seconds I stood there with my mouth open. Then I asked, "What do we do?" in a soft squeak. She startled me by taking my hand.
"I bet and lost. I don't know. They're your people. Bluff."
"Oh." Her eyes narrowed. Her stare fixed, became intense. Then a thin smile stretched her lips.
"I see."
"What?"
"Some answers. The shadow of what my husband is about. You have been manipulated more than you know. He anticipated being found out with his weather. Once he had your raven, he decided to bring your peasant girl to him."
"Yes."
"I think..."
"Come." My old comrades did not appear hostile, only puzzled. The circle continued to close. The lady caught my hand again, led me to the base of Old Father Tree. She whispered,
"Let there be peace between us while you observe, Ancient One.
One comes whom you will remember of old." And to me, "There are many old shadows in the world. Some reach back to the dawn. Not big enough, they seldom draw attention like my husband or the Taken. Soulcatcher had minions who antedated the tree. They were interred with her. I told you I recognized the way those bodies were torn." I stood there in the bloody light of the fading sun, baffled all to hell. She might as well have been speaking Ukateli. Darling, Silent, One-Eye, and Goblin came right to us. Elmo and the lieutenant halted within a rock's throw, but Tracker and Toad-Killer Dog sort of melted into the crowd. "What is going on?" I signed at Darling, obviously frightened.
"That is what we want to find out. We have been getting disjointed, nonsensical reports from the Menhirs since Goblin, One-Eye, and Tracker reached the plane. On one hand, Goblin and One-Eye confirm everything you told me, till you parted ways.
I glanced at my two friends and saw no friendship there. Their eyes were cold and glassy, like somebody else had moved in behind them. "Company," Elmo called, without shouting. A pair of Taken aboard boat carpets cruised some distance away. They came no closer. The lady's hand twitched. She controlled herself otherwise. They remained far enough out not to be recognizable. "More than one pair of hands is stirring this stew," I said. "Silent, get to the point. Right now you're scaring the crap out of me." He signed, "The rumor is strong in the Empire that you have sold out, that you have brought someone high up here to assassinate Darling, maybe even one of the new Taken." I could not help grinning. The planters of rumors had not dared tell the whole tale. The grin convinced Silent. He knew me well, which I guess was why he was watching me. Darling, too, relaxed, but neither One Eye nor Goblin softened. "What's wrong with these guys, Silent? They look like zombies." "They say you sold them out, that Tracker saw you, that if..." "Bullshit! Where the hell is Tracker? Get that big stupid son of a bitch out here and let him say that to my face." The light was weakening. The fat tomato of a sun had slipped behind the hills. Soon it would be dark. I felt a creepy tingle against my back. Was the damned tree going to act up? Once I thought of him, I sensed an intense interest upon Old Father Tree's part. Also a sort of dreamy rage coalescing. Suddenly, menhirs flickered around all over the place, even across the creek where the brush was dense. A dog yelped. Silent signed something to Elmo. I did not catch it because his back was turned. Elmo trotted toward the turmoil. The menhirs worked our way, forming a wall, herding something. Well, Tracker and Toad Killer Dog. Tracker looked vacuously puzzled. The mutt kept trying to scoot between the menhirs. They would not let him. Our people had to stay light on their feet to keep from getting their toes squashed. The menhirs pushed Toad Killer Dog and Tracker into the barren circle. The mongrel let out one long, despairing howl, tucked his tail between his legs, and slunk into Tracker's shadow. They stood about 10 feet from Darling. "Oh, gods," the lady murmured, and squeezed my hand so hard I almost yelled. The kernel of a change storm exploded in Old Father Tree's tinkly hair. It was huge. It was horrible. It was violent. It devoured us all with such ferocity we could do nothing but endure it. Shapes shifted, ran, changed. Yet those nearest Darling stayed exactly the same. Tracker screamed. Toad Killer Dog unleashed a howl that spread terror like a cancer. And they changed the most into the identical vile and violent monsters I saw while westward bound. The lady shouted something lost in the rage of the storm, but I caught its triumphal note. She did know those shapes. I stared at her. She had not changed. That seemed impossible. This creature about whom I had been silly for 15 years could not be the real woman. Toad Killer Dog flung himself into the jaws of the storm, hideous fangs bared, trying to reach the lady. He knew her, too. He meant to finish her while she was helpless inside the null. Tracker shambled after, just as puzzled as the Tracker that looked human had been. One of Father Tree's great branches whipped down. It batted Toad Killer Dog the way a man might bat an attack bunny. 3 times Toad Killer Dog gave it the valiant try. 3 times he failed. The 4th time, what might have been the grandfather of all lightning bolts, met him squarely and hurled him all the way to the creek, where he smoldered and twitched for a minute before rising and howling away into the enemy desert. At the same time, Tracker Beast went for Darling. He gathered her up and headed west. When Toad Killer Dog Beast went out of the game, Tracker got all the attention. Old Father Tree may not be a god, but when he talks, he has the voice. Coral reefs crumbled when he spoke. Everyone outside the barren grabbed their ears and screamed. For us who were closer, it was less tormenting. I do not know what he said. The language was none I knew, and it sounded like none I had ever heard. But it got through to Tracker. He put Darling down and came back into the teeth of the storm to stand before the god while that great voice hammered him and violent violet echoed round his misshapen bones. He bowed and did homage to the tree, and then he did change. The storm died as swiftly as it had begun. Everyone collapsed, even the lady. But unconsciousness did not come with collapse. By the wan light remaining, I saw the circling taken decide their hour had come. They fell back, gathered velocity, cut a ballistic cord through the null, each loosing 4 of those 30-foot spears meant for shattering wind whales, and I sat on the hard ground drooling, hand in hand with their target. Through sheer will, I guess, the lady managed to murmur, "They can read the future as well as I," which made no sense at the time. I overlooked that. 8 shafts arced down. Father Tree responded. 2 carpets disintegrated beneath their riders. The shafts exploded so high that none of their fiery charge reached the ground. The Taken did, though. They plunged in neat arcs into a dense coral reef east of us. Then the sleepiness came. The last thing I recall was that the glaze had left the 3 eyes of Goblin and One Eye. Chapter 44. The Quickening. There were dreams. Endless, horrible dreams. Someday, if I live so long, if I survive what is yet to come, I may record them, for they were the story of a god that is a tree, and of the thing his roots bind. No, I think not. One life of struggle and horror is enough to report, and this one goes on. The lady stirred first. She reached over, pinched me. The pain wakened my nerves. She gasped in a voice so soft I barely heard it. "Get up. Help me. We have to move your white rose." Made no sense. "The null." I was shivering. I thought it was reaction to whatever struck me down. "The thing below is of this world. The tree is not." Wasn't me shivering. It was the ground, ever so gently and rapidly. And now I became aware of a sound, something far away, deep down. I began to get the idea. Fear is one hell of a motivator. I got my feet under me. Above, the tinkle of old Father Tree beat maddeningly. There was panic in his wind chime song. The lady rose, too. We staggered toward Darling, supporting one another. Each groggy step spiced more life into my sluggish blood. I looked into Darling's eyes. She was aware, yet paralyzed. Her face was frozen halfway between fear and disbelief. We hoisted her up, each slipping an arm around her. The lady began counting steps. I remember no other labor so damnably great. I do not recall another time when I ran so much on will alone. The shaking of the earth waxed rapidly into the shudder of passing horsemen, then to a landslide's uproar, then to an earthquake. The ground around Father Tree began to writhe and buckle. A gout of flame and dust blasted upward. The tree tinkled a shriek. Blue lightning rioted in his hair. We pressed even harder in our flight down and across the creek. Something behind us began to scream. Images in mind. That which was rising was in agony. Father Tree subjected it to the torments of hell. But it came on, determined to be free. I no longer looked back. My terror was too great. I did not want to see what an ancient dominator looked like. We made it. Gods. Somehow the lady and I got Darling sufficiently far away for Father Tree to regain his full otherworldly power. The shriek rose rapidly in pitch and fury. I fell down, grasping my ears, and then it went away. After a time, the lady said, "Croker, go see if you can help the others. It's safe. The tree won." That quickly. Out of that much fury. Getting my feet under me seemed an all-night job. A blue nimbus still shimmered among Father Tree's branches. You could feel his aggravation from 200 yards. Its weight grew as I moved nearer. The ground around the tree's feet hardly seemed disturbed, considering the violence of moments ago. It looked freshly plowed and harrowed, was all. Some of my friends were partially buried, but no one appeared injured. Everyone was moving at least a little. Faces looked wholly stunned, except Tracker's. That ugly character had not resumed his fake human form. He was up early, placidly helping the others, dusting their clothing with hearty, friendly slaps. You would not have known that a short time before he had been a deadly enemy. Weird. Nobody needed any help, except the walking trees and menhirs. The trees had been overturned. The menhirs, many of them were down too, and unable to right themselves. That gave me a chill. I got me another shudder when I neared the old tree. Reaching out of the ground, fumbling at the bark of a root, was a human hand and forearm, long, leathery, greenish, with nails grown to claws, then broken and bleeding upon Father Tree. It did not belong to anyone from the hole. It twitched feebly now. Blue sparks continued to crackle above. Something about that hand stirred the old beast within me. I wanted to run away, shrieking, or seize an axe and mutilate it. I took neither course, for I got the distinct feeling that Father Tree was watching me and glowering more than a little, and maybe blaming me, personal-like, for wakening the thing to which the hand belonged. "I'm going," I said. "Know how you feel. Got my own old monster to keep down." And I backed away, bowing some each 3 or 4 steps. What the hell was that? I whirled. One eye was staring at me. He had a croaker is up to another of his crazies look. Just chatting with the tree. I looked around. People seemed to be finding their sea legs. Some of the less flustered were starting to right the walking trees. For the fallen menhirs, though, there seemed no hope. Those had gone to whatever reward a sentient stone may expect. Later they would be discovered righted, standing among the other dead menhirs near the creek ford. I returned to Darling and the lady. Darling was slow to come around, too groggy to communicate yet. The lady asked, "Everyone all right?" Except the guy in the ground, and he came close to making himself well. I described the hand. She nodded. "That's a mistake not likely to be made again soon." Silent and several others had gathered around, so we could say little that would not sound suspect. I did murmur, "What now?" In the background I heard the lieutenant and Elmo hollering about getting some torches out to shed a little light. She shrugged. "What about the Taken? You want to go after them?" "Hell no, but we can't have them running around loose in our backyard, either. No telling."
"The menhirs will watch them, won't they?"
"That depends on how pissed the old tree is. Maybe he's ready to let us go to hell in a bucket after this."
"You might find out."
"I'll go," Goblin squeaked. He wanted an excuse to put a lot of yards between him and the tree. "Don't take all night," I said. "Why don't the rest of you help Elmo and the lieutenant?" That got rid of some folks, but not Silent. There was no way I was going to get Silent out of sight of Darling. He had some reservations still. I chafed Darling's wrists and did other silly things, when time was the only cure. After some minutes I mumbled, 78 days, and the lady,
"Before long it will be too late."
I lifted an eyebrow. "He can't be beaten without her. It won't be long before the hardest ride won't get her there in time." I do not know what Silent made of that exchange. I do know that the lady looked up at him and smiled thinly, with that look she gets when she knows your thoughts.
"We need the tree." And, "We didn't get to finish our picnic."
"Huh?" She went away for a few minutes. When she returned, she had the blanket, dirtier than ever, and the bucket. She snagged my hand and headed for the dark. You watch for the traps, she told me. What the hell was this game?
Chapter 45. Bargain Struck. Later, a broken boat of a moon arose. We did not go far before it did, for there was not enough starlight to risk much movement. Once the moon did rise, the lady guided me in a slow circle toward where the Taken had come down. We halted in a clear area, sandy, but not dangerous. She spread the blanket. We were outside the null. Sit? I sat. She sat. I asked, What? Be quiet. She closed her eyes and went inside herself. I wondered if Silent had torn himself away from Darling to stalk us. Wondered if my comrades were making crude jokes about us as they labored over the walking trees. Wondered what the hell kind of game had me caught in its toils. You learned something out of it anyway, Croaker. After a while I realized she was back from wherever she had gone. I am amazed, she whispered. Who would have thought they had the guts? Eh? Our Skyborn friends. I expected Limper and Whisper up to their old crimes, but I got Scorn and Blister. Though I might have suspected her, had I thought. Necromancy is her great talent. Another round of her thinking aloud. I wondered if she did that often. I am sure she was unaccustomed to having witnesses around if she did. What do you mean? She ignored me. I wonder if they told the others. I hearkened back, put a few things together. The lady's divinations about three possible futures and no place in any of them. Maybe that meant there was no place in them for Taken, either. And maybe they figured they could take their futures into their own hands by ridding themselves of their mistress. A light step startled me, but I did not get excited. I just figured Silent had chosen to follow. So I was very surprised when Darling sat down with us, unchaperoned. How had I overlooked the return of the Null? Distracted, of course. The lady said, as though Darling had not appeared, They haven't yet gotten out of the coral. It's very slow going, and they're both injured. And though the coral can't kill them, it can cause a lot of pain. Right now they're lying up, waiting for first light. So? So maybe they won't get out at all. Darling can read lips. She knows already. Well, I have said 1,000 times that the girl is not stupid. I think Darling's knowledge was implicit in the position she took. She placed me squarely in the gap between them. Oh, yeah. I found myself playing interpreter. Trouble is, I cannot record what went back and forth, because someone tampered with my memories later. I got only one chance to make notes, and those now make no sense. Some sort of negotiation took place. I can still conjure a sense of profound astonishment at Darling's willingness to deal, also an amazement at the lady for the same reason. They reached an accommodation, an uneasy one, to be sure, for the lady henceforth stuck very close and kept me between her and anyone else while she was within the null. Great feeling, knowing you're a human shield, and Darling kept near the lady to prevent her calling on her power. But she did turn her loose once. That is getting ahead slightly. First, we all sneaked back, not letting anyone know there had been summit. The lady and I returned after Darling, trying to look like we had had an energetic and thorough encounter. I could not help chuckling at some envious looks. The lady and I went outside the null again next morning, after Darling distracted Silent, One Eye, and Goblin by sending them to dicker with the Menhirs. Father Tree could not make up his mind. We went the other direction and tracked Taken. Actually, there was little tracking to do. They were not yet free of the coral. The lady called upon that power she held over them, and they ceased to be taken. Her patience was exhausted. Maybe she wanted them to serve as an object lesson. In any event, buzzards, real buzzards, were circling before we returned to the hole. That easy, I thought. For her. And for me,
when I tried to kill the limper with every damned thing going my way. Impossible.
She and I went back to translating. So busy did we stay that I did not remain abreast of the news from outside. I was a little vacant anyway, because she had expunged my memories of the meeting with Darling. Anyhow, somehow, the White Rose got right with Father Tree. The shaky alliance survived. One thing I did notice, the men here stopped ragging me about strangers on the plain. They meant Tracker and Toadkiller Dog all the time. And the lady. Two of three were no longer strangers. No one knew what had become of Toadkiller Dog. Even the Menhirs could not trace him. I tried to get Tracker to explain the name. He could not remember. Not even Toadkiller Dog himself. Weird. He was the tree's creature now.
Chapter 46 Son of the Tree. I was nervous. I had trouble sleeping. Days were slipping away. Out west, the great tragic was gnawing its banks. A four-legged monster was running to its overlord with news that it had been found out. Darling and the lady were doing nothing. Raven remained trapped. Bowmans remained trapped in the long fires he had called down on his own head. The end of the world tramped ever closer, and nobody was doing anything. I completed my translations, and was no wiser than before, it seemed, though Silent, Goblin, and One-Eye kept fooling with charts of names, cross-indexing, seeking patterns. The lady watched over their shoulders more than did I. I fiddled with these annals. I bothered myself with how to phrase a request for the return of those I had lost at Queen's Bridge. I fussed. I grew ever more antsy. People became irritated with me. I began taking moonlight walks to work off my nervous energy. One night the moon was full, a fat, orange bladder just scaling the hills to the east. A grand sight, especially with patrolling mantas crossing its face. For some reason, the desert had a lilac luminescence upon all its edges. The air was chill. There was a dust of powder swirling on the breeze, fallen that afternoon. A change storm flickered far away to the north. A menhir appeared beside me. I jumped 3 feet. "Strangers on the plain, Rock?" I asked.
"None stranger than you, Croaker."
"I get a comedian. You want something?"
"No, the Father of Trees wants you."
"Yeah? See you." Heart pounding, I headed toward the hole. Another menhir blocked the path. "Well, since you put it that way." Faking bravery, I headed upstream. They would have herded me. Best accept the inevitable, less humiliation. The wind was bitter around the barren, but when I crossed the boundary, it was like stepping into summer. No wind at all, though the old tree was tinkling, and heat like a furnace. The moon had risen enough to flood the barren with light, now argent. I approached the tree. My gaze fixed on that hand and forearm, still protruding, still gripping a root, still, it seemed, betraying the occasional feeble twitch. The root had grown, though, and seemed to be enveloping the hand, as a tree used for a line post will envelop a wire tacked to it. I stopped 5 feet from the tree. "Come closer," it said, in plain voice, in conversational tone and volume. I said, "Yipe," and looked for the exits. About 2 skillion menhirs surrounded the baron. So much for running away.
"Stand still, ephemeral."
My feet froze to the ground. "Ephemeral, eh?"
"You asked help. You demanded help. You whined and pleaded and begged for help. Stand still and accept it. Come closer."
"Make up your mind." I took 2 steps. Another would have me climbing him.
"I have considered. This thing you ephemera fear, in the ground so far from here, would be a peril to my creatures if it rose,
I sense no significant strength in those who resist it. Therefore, I hated to interrupt, but I just had to scream. You see, something had me by the ankle. It was squeezing so hard, I felt the bones grinding, crushing. Sorry about that, old-timer. The universe turned blue. I rolled in a hurricane of anger. Lightning roared in Father Tree's branches. Thunder rolled across the desert. I yelled some more. Bolts of blue hammered around me, crisping me almost as much as my tormentor. But at last, the hand turned me loose. I tried to run away. One step, and down I went. I kept on crawling while Father Tree apologized and tried to call me back. Like hell, I would crawl through the menhirs if I had to. My mind filled with a waking dream, Father Tree delivering a message direct. Then the earth got quiet, except for the wish as menhirs vanished. Big hoopla from the direction of the hole. A whole gang charged out to find the cause of the uproar. Silent reached me first. "One eye," I said. "I need one eye." He is the only one beside me with medical training, and contrary though he is, I could count on him to take medical instructions. One eye showed up in a moment, along with 20 others. The watch had reacted quickly. "Ankle," I told him. "Maybe crushed. Somebody get some light up here, and a damn shovel." "A shovel? Are you off your gourd?" One Eye demanded. "Just get it, and do something for the pain." Elmo materialized, still buckling buckles. "What happened, Croaker?" "Old Tree wanted to talk. Had the rocks bring me over. Says he wants to help us. Only while I was listening, that hand got a hold of me. Like to ripped my foot off. The racket was the tree saying, 'Now stop that. That's not polite.'" "Cut his tongue out after you fix his leg," Elmo told One Eye. "What did it want, Croaker?" "Your ear's gone. To help with the Dominator. Said he thought it over. Decided it was in his own best interest to keep the Dominator down. Give me a hand up." One Eye's efforts were paying dividends. He had sponged one of his wild jungle glops onto my ankle. It had swollen 3 times normal size already, and the pain was fading. Elmo shook his head. I said, "I'll break your damned leg if you don't get me up." So he and Silent hoisted me, but supported me. "Bring them shovels," I said. A half dozen had appeared. They were entrenching tools, not real ditch diggers. "You guys insist on helping. Get me back over to the tree." Elmo growled. For a moment, I thought Silent might say something. I eyed him expectantly, smiling. I had been waiting 20-some years. No luck. Whatever vow he had taken, whatever it was that had driven him to abstain from speech, it had put a steel lock on Silent's jaw. I have seen him so pissed he could chew nails, so excited he lost sphincter control. But nothing has shaken his resolution against talking. Blue still sparkled in the tree's branches. Leaves tinkled. Moonlight and torchlight mixed into weird shadows the sparks sent dancing. "Around him," I told my body slaves. I had not seen it myself, so it must be beyond that trunk. Yep, there it was, out 20 feet from the base of the tree. A sapling. It stood about 8 feet tall.